Hello, 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 everybody. How we doing? Welcome to another edition of the pod. September 16th, 2014. The Revs. Oh, yeah. Remember that time we had that podcast and I said the Revs were going to take 12 points in four games? Well, guess what? They did. And with a win versus Columbus on Saturday, they're in second place.
In fairness, I never said they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I wasn't confident they could get through Sporting.
I overlooked Sporting, and I was right to do it. No,
you were wrong to overlook them. You got lucky with your prediction. Let's be honest.
At Brian Speaks, it's Tuesday, people. You already know the man, the myth, the legend himself sitting to my right tonight.
I was really hoping it was Thursday already.
Me too. It's only the beginning of the week. And it's getting colder.
That part I like.
No. We're going to avoid the cold talk for now and save that for October and November when we're pushing for playoffs. You hope that this team... You think that this team is essentially in a safe zone right now without saying it. They have to be.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't make it, it's going to be a blunder.
If they don't make it, it'll be an absolute collapse.
Yeah. I mean, they really have to fall off the reins of that one. And they shouldn't. I mean, their schedule coming up fairly... Not that difficult, I'm going to be honest with you. Not that difficult.
With the exception of Sporting.
Yes. But that's, you know... But you got to look at Sporting... I mean, do we go into this right now?
Yeah, let's do the schedule right now. Let's do it.
All right. So they got...
I mean, what else are we doing here today,
they
right?
They got September 20th at Columbus, September 26th at Sporting,
yep.
October 4th, home Columbus, October 11th at Montreal. So Sporting obviously is the glaring issue there, right? But Sporting also has two CONCACAF championship matches coming up between now and that game.
Good point.
So Sporting will be playing on 9/18 and 9/23.
They're playing in 2 days.
Yeah, so that's going to be a pretty rough run for them. And we've seen when they lost Benny, when they lost Dom Dwyer, when they were here a few weeks ago, they're not the same team. So you're going to be looking at it like, I don't know what Vermes is going to do. Is he all in for the CONCACAF? Because it seems like no MLS team ever is. Or is he all in for MLS this year?
Well, that's the stupid thing about CONCACAF Champions League is that you put it in a time where you have a bunch of MLS teams that are fighting for playoffs. Well, and you got 90% of MLS teams that don't give a damn about the CONCACAF Champions League. And they shouldn't.
The real stupid thing about the CONCACAF Champions League is that you qualify 2 years prior to being in it. So you get teams that are awful because they were good 2 years ago.
Like Montreal.
Like Montreal. And now they're no good. That's the real stupid thing about CONCACAF Championships League. And it's not taken seriously, and I wish it was.
It has to be restructured.
It would be a really fun thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. It has to be restructured. And that you made another great point with Sporting Kansas City being a different team without Fail Harbor and Dwyer. You saw what the Revs were able to do defensively in limiting Kansas City's shots. Now, granted, Kansas City's still a dangerous team offensively.
Absolutely.
With Dwyer and Fail Harbor, without Dwyer and Fail Harbor. The biggest problem with Sporting Kansas City this year, and you saw it at Red Bull Arena in Harrison, New Jersey, what was it, like a week after the Revs played Sporting, or that weekend the Revs, that Sporting traveled to New York.
Yep.
Sporting has made the same consistent mistakes, and they cannot finish their chances. They dominate teams. They'll outpossess teams. They'll get great shots in front of the net. They'll get great position in front of the net. They can't finish for diddly squat.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be the case. And that's more of a recent phenomenon for them. I mean, there was a part of the season where they were putting it in the back of the net. And I mean, even just recently, they played Chivas. And again, you know, the league's, you know, worst team, ideally. Not that impressive, but they did drop four on them, so yeah. they finished there.
But you're supposed to beat Chivas by that amount, especially with what you have on that roster.
Ideally, yeah.
Two U.S. men's national team roster products, a former men's national team product, the top scorer or the second top scorer on that team in Dom Dwyer, and then you have Orlin Collin manning your center half defense. And that team should be in first place. That surprises me that they've struggled as much as they have down this stretch.
That's been one of the biggest shockers for me of this entire MLS season of how DC was able to take first place over Sporting. Because Sporting, like I said at the start of the year, Sporting's going to be first place. You can write that down. Like, that might as well just be scripture at this point. Sporting Kansas City, with the amount of talent they have, should be first place. No one even comes close. Like, DC, I don't know how they're doing it. Well, I know how they're doing it, but it just doesn't make sense.
Well, you know what? Here's what we got here. Regardless of the fact that Sporting Kansas City has imploded, DC United has surged, New England has remained in third place. Among all of this crazy, hectic MLS season where the Eastern Conference has shifted so much, New England has been the only team, really, to stay locked in. And I guess DC United and Sporting Kansas City, too. But, you know, three through six, New England's the only team that's remained in their position this weekend.
Yeah, I mean,
I should say that, excuse me. New York, too, stayed in fourth. But you know what? New England's sitting comfortably in their position. DC's not sitting comfortably in second. Sporting's not sitting comfortably in second. DC's sitting comfortably in first. You know, everything else is a question mark.
Yeah, ultimately. And, I mean, that's what the Eastern Conference has become. I mean, for a while, the Eastern Conference was like a laughingstock because if you looked at it, it just was a bunch of poor teams.
Yeah. But and there's still a lot of poor teams in there.
There are still a lot of poor teams. But I think what's happening now is that the better teams, the Sportings, the DCs, the Revs now, and New York, I mean, they're starting to hit their stride. Well, I guess Sporting's actually they're off their stride. They're falling backwards.
Yeah, but they've played well enough throughout the middle part of the season.
They were so streaky at the beginning part that they got themselves where they are now. Yeah. But everyone else is just kind of falling in place, and by doing so well, the Eastern Conference is almost on par with the Western Conference now. It doesn't look as bad, at least.
Well, so you have that. And then the next item of business that we have to touch today. Should Jermaine Jones play against Columbus? Again, this team is in third place right now. If they win this weekend, they could jump to second because they'll have more wins than Sporting Kansas City, even though they'll be tied on points with KC. And then if, quote unquote, if New England was to lose, they're not dropping from third place. So this is a good weekend for the Revs to either advance or just stay where they are.
Yeah, I think the biggest question I have is whether or not Jermaine Jones should play or not. Is he 100%?
Right, if he's not 100%, you don't need to play him. And I just gave the reasons why.
I mean,
you're not going to lose third place if you were to drop points or if you were to drop all 3 points this weekend.
Yeah, like if he's 80%, don't play him.
No.
It's not worth it
at this point.
I mean, you are at the point of the season where you're absolutely thinking playoffs and you're thinking depth. And by doing that, you have to look at a game like this. You're like, all right, win or lose, not a huge deal. Obviously, you want to win. You want to win them all. Second place would be fantastic. I would love to have the Revs in second place. It's not the end result. This is a league where you have playoffs. All you need to be is 1 through 5.
Right.
Even if it's something that you don't play Jermaine Jones and, you know, as a result, somehow you drop to 4, you know. Mm. I mean, I know you won't do it immediately.
Right.
But if it's something long-term that happens, I don't care where they finish.
As long as they finish in the playoffs.
In the playoffs, because they're a team. If they're in fifth place, they're a damn good fifth place. They're a damn good fourth place. They're a damn good third place. They're a damn good team at this juncture.
Yeah.
As long as they can keep up what they have going.
They're a good team, but here's the thing. You want to get second place, and here's why. I think that this team desperately would need that second home game against Kansas City. You want that game, that second home game, here in New England. And you don't want to be traveling to Kansas City. Because I think the Revs and Kansas City will play each other in the playoffs. I think all we're just waiting to find out is who's going to be the 2 and who's going to be the 3. Now, I agree with you that Jermaine Jones shouldn't play, that if he's not even close to 80%, yet alone 100%. Because, as I stated before, you're not dropping from third place. And also, too, how well has this team been playing with Jermaine Jones on the roster but not on the field? You know, look at the Chicago game. Excuse me, not the Chicago game. It was the game where Lee Wynn scored that second-half goal. I think it was against Kansas City.
He scored so many.
He scored so much recently that he's a machine. He's been a machine. And, you know, we'll talk with Jeff Lemieux about Lee Wynn and this Jermaine Jones stuff in a couple of minutes here. But, you know, I'm looking at it like this, man. If you know for a fact that you're good going into next week already and you're not worrying about dropping out of the playoff race or dropping out of contention, well, screw it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of those situations, like I said, how healthy is he? And I mean, we're in agreement. If he's not even remotely close to 80%, 75%, right. I don't... If he's like, say he's 80%, play him a half.
Yeah, play him a half. Play him 90 minutes.
Yeah,
play him 60. Play him 30 minutes.
Yeah, play him 60. I'd be fine with 60.
You'd be okay with 60?
Or play him the last half an hour. That'd be fine, too.
Yeah.
I think I like that situation because... Depending on how the game's running out, if you put Jermaine Jones in at the 60th minute, and you know it's a game where you need that physical body, then take him out for Scott Caldwell. If it's a game where you don't really need that presence, take him out for Kobayashi or whoever you're going to start over him.
Scott's been playing good. He is unreal.
He was phenomenal when he came in that second half last week. That was probably the best I've ever seen Scott Caldwell play.
Doesn't get enough credit, gets treated like absolute garbage, I think, by the fan base sometimes, and he really doesn't garner the respect that he deserves. If you don't have Scott Caldwell out there, I'm telling you right now, this team would not be as good defensively as you had them in the last couple of weeks. Guarantee it, because even with Jermaine Jones in the lineup, things are still shaky for me, Brian. Things are still very, very shaky for me, and here's why. I thought Andrew Ferrell has been absolutely incredible this year. I think, first off, he's a great talent, a great human being. He's just a really nice guy. But the problem with Andrew recently is that he's getting beat down the sidelines too much, and he's playing so high up the field that he's got to track back way more than he needs to, and he's overexposed right now. Another topic I want to cover with Jeff, but I mean, it goes along with my concerns with the defense right now.
Yeah, no, I definitely, first, I disagree that Caldwell is not well liked here. I feel like he is pretty well received by the family.
Yeah, but you know what? People were quick to throw him out. Like, oh, okay, Jermaine Jones, let's see you later, Scott.
Well,
see you later. Screw you.
I mean, you gotta look at the situation. I mean, I would throw away Lee Wynn if, you know, Messi came on the team. I mean,
sure, but how many people considered playing in that 4-2-3-1 formation before we saw Jay throw it out there against, what was it, Chicago a couple of weeks ago? I mean, everybody thought that this was going to be 4-1-4-1. Jermaine Jones, is that going to be your number six? He's going to sit in front of the defense, and that's it.
I think a decent amount of people did see a 4-2. I mean,
people
in the know did. You know, maybe not your Joe Schmo, like, Twitter hero, like, that just, oh, hey, I'm just going to tweet out my feelings on every single topic ever because I'm always right. You know, maybe that person didn't see it coming, but I feel like the people who cover this team, and I'm not even considering myself this. Like, I'm that go-between. Like, I'm not really a media guy. I'm kind of a Twitter guy, too. But I feel like...
You're not a fan? You're just a Twitter guy?
Yeah, I'm just a Twitter guy. I feel like the people that actually knew what they were doing and, you know, cover this team and understand the sport better than just Jermaine Jones... Goodbye, Scott Caldwell. I don't think that was the overall consensus, to be perfectly honest.
I think, but people were like, hey, Scott can't get the same bite that Jermaine's got. Scott's too weak. Scott's small. Scott's not aggressive. Scott's probably been one of the most aggressive players on the field with Jermaine.
But that's because he's picked up. He's learned from his mistake. He's an absolute smart kid. He's a great player.
Yeah, I just heard.
And he clearly listened to the criticism that he got at the end of the year because he has fixed everything. At the end of last year, he was a defensive liability. He was one of the main reasons, and I love Scott Caldwell, one of the main reasons the Revs did not advance in the playoffs because he was too weak, he was too strong, he was too outmatched.
I wouldn't say
outmatched.
That. They just couldn't score enough first against Kansas City team that was just too dominant. We're talking about losing to the eventual MLS champions
scored,
here, though.
They scored 3 goals in the 2 games. That should be enough.
But it's a matter of... going down in that, and this is why I say second place is such an important position That second home game is so different. And plus, you can't just put that on Scott. That's an entire – that's a very, very young team going into a very, very, very difficult situation last year.
When you replay the tape later, you'll see that I did not put it all on Scott.
Well, not okay. Not,
I said
I'm not,
he's one of the reasons.
What? Okay,
not,
fine.
Not the reason. I would never put that on any one person. It's a team of 11 versus 11. I would never, ever, ever put a loss on one player unless it's Bobby Shuttleworth.
All right, I'll buy that. You win.
I was hoping that was going to be more of a joke.
I couldn't find a joke in that.
Swing and a
miss. What were you looking for? What type of joke were you looking for in that one?
Just a Bobby hater joke.
I'm not a Bobby hater, man. You're looking at the wrong person for a Bobby hater. The only thing I hate about Bobby is his haircut. That dude needs like a crew cut or
best
something.
Best thing about Bobby Shuttleworth is his dubstep haircut.
We digress. So yeah, regardless of the fact though, Jermaine Jones, should he be playing this weekend? I think we've come to the consensus that it is no. And I think we've also come to the consensus too that, and it's not that he shouldn't be playing, he shouldn't be starting. Have him come off the bench. All right. If this guy's got a foot contusion and you've got injury worries, screw the win against Columbus. Go for the tie. Play for the tie. Just play to ensure the fact that you got at least a minimum of third place in the Eastern Conference. Don't try to throw a guy out there that you paid close to $5 million for just to see him go out for the rest of the season. Don't do it, Jay. End of story. And with that being said, Jermaine Jones has not, obviously, he's only been here for a couple of weeks. And even with him being here a couple of weeks, I still say he's not the best player on this team right now, because the best player on this team is the guy that sits in front of him, and that's Lee Wynn. And Lee Wynn is on fire. It is scary what Wynn has done now in five games, really, because he's a facilitator. He has scored in numerous areas in the offensive third. And if you have any worries, I think, going into the playoffs about the Revs' execution in the final third, you can quell those now. Because I think that since you have a Lee Wynn who could just focus on playing offense again, God, I can't wait to see what this team is going to be like when they're really hitting their stride in late October.
Yeah, Lee Wynn, I mean, I said this last week, he's been the best midfielder in the league for the last, I don't know, pick it, 5-6 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just incredible as of late. I mean, late goals, early goals, the two-way play, the turnovers he causes. I mean, he's just been doing everything. I don't know what happened. Like, Lee's been a great player. Last year was not the best year for him. I think he took a lot of slack for that. But since the start of this year, he has been very good.
Oh, absolutely.
One of the best players on the probably the best player overall for the Revs. And yeah, like you said, should he be in MVP contention? My answer, yes.
How isn't he? Same thing with Yossi Zardes. But I'm not going to get into Zardes right now. I'm going to save that for another day. But how isn't Lee Wynn at least in contention? You know, I understand Dwyer and Fail Harbor have scored more. Same thing with Bradley Wright Phillips. But
well, Benny hasn't scored more.
Excuse me. Only Dwyer has scored more. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Dwyer and Bradley Wright Phillips are the only two guys in the Eastern Conference who have scored more goals than Lee Wynn. But the thing about Dwyer and then Bradley Wright Phillips is they're
no
pure scorers. Exactly. No facilitation between them.
Between the two of them, they have what, two assists?
Great call.
Like, seriously, like that's my biggest thing. Like, Bradley Wright Phillips, love the guy.
He's had a great year.
Yeah, phenomenal story. Like, love the fact that he's being as good as he is. But he's not MVP contention. He's not even the MVP of his team. Thierry Henry is the MVP of that team.
All right, that's a great point, and it leads us into our guest now, Brian, host of RevolutionSoccer.net. Not Joffrey, but Jeffrey Lemieux. What's up, buddy?
How are you doing, man? I got to say, this is probably the first time that I have spoken with you. I know you always say, wherever I am, it's gorgeous and sunny. It's actually a little bit overcast, a little bit crisp this morning in Foxborough, but I'm cool with it because it feels like the playoffs.
Yeah, it does. It's approaching October. Can you believe it? We're approaching the end of the season already. And oh, guess what? The Revs are back in third place. So, Jeff, Your thoughts on this incredible, because we haven't talked in a while here, five-game winning streak for this team.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly starting to come together. It's funny when you look at, I know I posted a picture of the last, I guess it's 23, 24 games now, and you see the streaks that this team has been on this year from the beginning of the year when, you know, they had a 6-0-1 run through April, May, and into early June, and then went on an eight-game losing streak through the middle of the summer, which obviously we talked about quite a bit through the summer, and now to be five straight wins and 6-1-1 in the last eight, and it's been up and down, but I guess it doesn't really matter because at this point in September, as you mentioned, heading into October, the Reds are hitting their stride. They are in a very good place in the Eastern Conference as you approach the final six games of the regular season, and most importantly, they are playing well at the time of the season that you want to play well. So right now things are clicking. Obviously, you still got to take it a game at a time, and you never know what's going to happen because this is a crazy, crazy league, but things are setting up well as we are sitting here in mid-September.
Right. It's hard to look ahead to anything because you want to know what you're planning for going into each week. The Revs having a tough time right now to assess where they are going into Columbus because Jermaine Jones has a foot contusion, and since Saturday night, we really haven't heard any news on what the current status of Mr. Jones is. So, Mr. Lemieux, can you enlighten us on the update of Mr. Jermaine Jones?
Yeah, unfortunately, right now, as we speak, early Tuesday, we don't have an update yet just because the players, after Saturday night's game, we're off Sunday, and then we're off Monday from training as far as, you know, players obviously come in if they have injuries, come in for treatment and things like that, but there's no media access on Monday. So the first media access to actually catch up and try to get an update on Jermaine and any of the other players will be today on Tuesday and then into Wednesday when we get out to training too. So we don't really have an update from Saturday. The good news was when we spoke with head coach Jay Heaps and Jermaine himself on Saturday, some of those fears seemed to be allayed. It didn't seem to be as bad as we feared it might have been when he had to come off at halftime. Jermaine did say himself that he had had x-rays done and that nothing was broken, so that was obviously a good sign. He said mostly it was just a contusion, that he had probably a bone bruise. So that was positive in the sense that it didn't seem like it was bad as it could have been. They kind of indicated it was more of a precautionary thing, that he got to halftime, there was some pain in his foot, some swelling, and at this point in the season, there was no need to risk him at that point. The smart move was to get him off the field, make sure that he didn't injure himself further. So I think that was the smart move on Saturday night. And, we'll see as we move forward here. I guess the other positive thing from that was Jones indicated that he suffered the injury probably in the 25th minute of the game, and he did play through until halftime. So he was able to play with whatever the injury was for another 20 to 25 minutes. Probably wasn't super comfortable, but he was able to play with it for a little while. So I guess that's you can probably take a little bit of positive out of that as well. But hopefully in these next 2 days or so, Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll really get an update and see kind of where Jermaine is as we head into the weekend.
Jeff Lemieux with us. And Jeff, I think only once we've seen Jermaine Jones play 90 minutes in New England. And for the other times that he's, for as long as he's been here, the other times where he hasn't played 90 minutes, especially where he's only played like one half, if you will, this team has looked good without him on the field. So can you talk about your thoughts on where this team stands, where they would be without Jermaine Jones for a game if he wasn't to play a 90 at all?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, Jermaine Jones coming in has made a tremendous impact on this team when he's been on the field. And I think he probably has even a little bit of that impact when he's not on the field just because of some of the confidence that he kind of instills in these players. And yes, Jermaine has been a huge part on the field of what the Reds have been able to do in the past four or five games. But you look at some of the other individual performances of guys who have been stepping up through this winning streak. I mean, Lee Wynn is playing as well as anybody is playing in this league right now. And yes, that has a little to do with, you know, what a player like Jermaine Jones is able to open up for Lee on the field. But it also just has to do with the fact that Lee Wynn is playing some fantastic soccer right now. AJ Soares has been an absolute beast this season, in particular the past month or so. He has played some of his best games in a Revolution jersey, in my opinion. Kellen Rowe is starting to step up. We're seeing him hit some long-range rockets. I mean, you're starting to see a lot of these individual performances come together because the team is playing well together. And it has a lot to do with Jermaine Jones, but not everything to do with Jermaine Jones.
And that's a great point. I'm sorry to cut you off there, Jeff, but that was a great point you made about Lee, about how well he's been playing. And, you know, I asked Mike Burns this. I asked Brian Bilello this. None of them are going to tell me. Jay's probably not going to tell me. But I'm counting on you here, man. What is in the water in Foxborough? Like, come on. Like, are you putting something in there? Like, Lee Wynn has been playing out of his mind. I'm figuring you're putting something in his diet regimen, right?
I think a lot of Lee's offensive success in recent weeks has come down to the work he's putting in on the defensive side of the ball. I think that you have seen Lee working tirelessly for 90 minutes when the Reds aren't in possession, and he's working to win the ball back at all times. And I think what the key to that has been some of the times is when the Reds are in possession and teams are able to set up against the Reds defensively, they're able to key in on Lee a little bit. They kind of have the time and the wherewithal to key in on Lee and say, this is one of their big guys. We got to make sure that he's not going to hurt us. So then obviously that becomes difficult for Lee when teams are keying in on him. When the Reds are able to force turnovers in dangerous areas, whether it be in midfield or even in the attacking third, and a lot of the times it's Lee who's forcing those turnovers, they're able to hit teams quickly and don't really have time to set up and key in on Lee. So I think a lot of the times when the Reds are able to force those turnovers in dangerous areas, that's what opens up the space for Lee. That's what creates the opportunities for him, because when he gets that space, he's absolutely deadly. I mean, he's not missing right now. So I think it's his defensive work that is opening up his offensive chances.
You mentioned Kellen Rowe playing well, too. He's been adjusted to the outside. Teal Bunbury's, I thought, been playing pretty good. But the one guy that's been sort of left out of this mix, if you will, Jeff, is Diego Fagundes. He's obviously scored his goal recently. I can't remember off the top of my head automatically, but I do know that he has seen the game a little bit differently recently. He's 19 years old. He's still learning. He's still developing. He's still growing. But how is his mentality right now? Is he taking this all well?
I think, Diego, for a 19-year-old kid, he's taking it a lot better than I would have taken it when I was a 19-year-old kid. I have been thoroughly impressed with Diego's mindset and his approach really since he came in as a 15-year-old. And to speak with Diego now, even after he scored his goal against Chicago a couple of weekends ago or last weekend, he said, look, it was fantastic for me to get off the mark and get that goal, and it was a little bit of relief, and yes, I want to be scoring goals for this team, but there are a lot of other things that I can do as well. And whatever this team is going to ask me to do, whether it's to come in off the bench, whether it's to start, whether it's to be a defensive nuisance and a pest and force turnovers, whether it's going to be to set things up, Diego Fagundes is a player who right now is willing to do whatever he can for the team. And for sure, Diego is a player who wants to score goals, and that is kind of his ideal scenario, especially after he scored 13 last year. He wants to be on the field scoring goals, but I think he has the right mentality to keep his head down, to keep working. When he gets his chances, he knows he needs to take advantage of them, and he certainly did against Chicago. And I think from a mental perspective and a mental standpoint, I think Diego certainly has the right attitude right now.
Another guy offensively that has done well, started the season on the bench, but has seen a lot of time off the bench in starting 11, and I think has been one of the fun players just to watch overall, Charlie Davies. Jeff, your thoughts on him as well?
Yeah, Charlie has been absolutely critical for this team in recent weeks, and I think he's really started to settle into that kind of that point position. And, you know, we talk about the Reds playing a 4-1-4-1, or it's plays kind of like a 4-3-3 when they're in possession. They really kind of are three forward positions. And when he came in last year and was trying to settle into a new group, he was playing primarily in one of those wing positions. And he said from the start, look, this is totally different for me. I've never had this much defensive responsibilities. It plays a little bit different when we're in possession. And looking back, maybe it didn't necessarily play to all of his strengths. And now playing him in that point forward position, he's able to play off defenders' back shoulders. He's able to make runs in behind, use his speed. And you're seeing that that's where he feels most comfortable, and that's where he's able to be most effective. So you're starting to see a little bit of kind of vintage Charlie Davies with some of the runs that he makes, cutting in behind defenders, timing his runs to perfection, and then the finish is there. And that's kind of, you know, the end product is seeing that finish. And when you start seeing him make some of the finishes like he did against Portland at a tight angle and then Chicago, that's the Charlie Davies that people remember from 4 or 5 years ago. And if you start to see that, there's no question he can be huge for this team coming down the stretch run.
Far Post podcast host Jeff Lemieux with us. Jeff's going to be posting, no pun intended there, episode of the Far Post today with Cathal Collins, so make sure you check that out. And Jeff, when you look at the structure of the Eastern Conference now, if a win comes New England's way this weekend, they take second place by the tiebreaker of having more wins than Sporting Kansas City. If they lose, it's not necessarily the worst thing in the world either, because they have an advantage right now with a points gap between them, New York, and Columbus. So what do you think the mentality is for coach this weekend? Do you think 3 points are a necessity just because of the pressure you could put on Sporting Kansas City if you were to get that win? Or would he just be okay with a tie as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, from our perspective, we obviously look at the stretches. We looked at 5 of 6 at home. We looked at, you know, 4 out of the final 6 here on the road. And we talk about all the different scenarios. From a team perspective, they're doing everything that they possibly can to keep it one game at a time. So they are 100% focused on this weekend's game against Columbus, going to Crew Stadium and the challenges that they're going to face there. And I think going into the game, you will always have 3 points on your mind. That will always be the primary objective. And then it's based on how the game is playing out from there that you're trying to figure out how you can maximize points based on the scenario. If you go behind and you're able to claw yourself back into a game, and maybe you're under a bit of pressure in the second half, maybe at that point you start to play it in a way that, okay, let's do what we can to get out of here with a point. And if we can steal 3, then we'll steal 3. But there are other scenarios where if you're tied in the second half and you're the team that's on the front foot and that's the way the game is playing out, then you'll go for the 3 points. So I think it really is kind of situational and figuring it out throughout the course of the game as to how the game's playing out, what the different situations are, what you're looking for. Because there are certain scenarios on Saturday where, yeah, you'd probably, based on the game and how the game is playing out, you'd take a point. But going into it, I don't think that that's a mentality going into it saying, we'll take one and get out of here. I think the mentality at the start is always going to be 3 points.
All right, so final one for me, Jeff, before I let you go here. When you look at the schedule for a team like Sporting Kansas City, and then you factor in New York, and then you see the streakiness of teams like Philadelphia, Columbus, Toronto, and Houston, and then you have the Revs, where do you see the structure of this conference finishing up when it's all said and done? And how much can the Revs take advantage of a lot of these scheduling issues a lot of the top teams in the East are facing right now?
I mean, the Revs have certainly set themselves up well going into this final stretch, right? I mean, there was a really similar situation last year. We had to play 4 of 6 on the road to close the season, and the Revs were actually below the red line, and they had to go into that final stretch knowing that they needed to win games on the road. The Revs have put themselves in a better situation this year where they are 5 points above the red line. They're 4 points above fourth place, so they've given themselves that little bit of a cushion, which is fantastic to have, but we know how crazy this league is, and you can see 2 weeks from now, you can be below the red line. I mean, it's absolutely insane. But yeah, I think right now with the way you look at the Eastern Conference, and I'll say this with the caveat that from a team perspective, they are only focusing on Columbus this weekend, and they're not thinking about where they are in the East and all of that. But from our perspective, if you're looking at the standings, you'd be crazy not to be eyeing second place with Kansas City, only 3 points ahead and a game in hand, and going to Kansas City next weekend. And then you even see D.C. with it 5 points ahead of the Revs right now, and it's not crazy to start thinking about the top of the conference. So it's going to be a difficult road for the Revs. Don't get me wrong. 4 out of 6 to close the season on the road. There are no easy road games in this league. We know one of those games is up in Montreal, and yeah, you look at a Montreal team which is at the bottom of the MLS standings right now. The Revs already went to Montreal once this year and lost. There are no easy road games in this league. It is going to be a difficult path to the end of the season, but you take it one game at a time, you take a point or 3 points from these games, and you see where you end up, and I don't think it's crazy to be eyeing second place or who knows, maybe even first place come a month from now.
All right, he's Jeff Lemieux of RevolutionSoccer.net. Make sure you check out the Far Post podcast from today if you haven't already. And, Jeff, apologies for the corny joke to intro you there, but Joffrey and Jeffrey, I thought that would sound funny, and it didn't come.
Oh, it's quite all right. And it's actually, if you're referring to Joffrey Castillon, it's Joffrey.
Joffrey.
Joffrey, which is going to take some getting used to. It absolutely will, and I'm sure I'll get it wrong again. But, yeah, Joffrey.
All right, well, we have Jeffrey Lemieux. Can I call you Jeffrey? Is that okay?
You can call me Jeffrey.
Okay, I'll get away with it for today at least. Jeff Lemieux of RevolutionSoccer.net taking some time today. Jeff, great talking to you as always.
No problem. Thanks, Tom.
First place? First place, he said. It's not out of the realm of possibility. Sure, sure. It's not out of the realm of possibility I could lose another 20 pounds.
It's a lofty ambition, but hey, I mean, weirder things have happened, ultimately. I mean, I wouldn't put my money on it. But hey, like
five points. Really? I didn't even think of it that way.
It's MLS.
I didn't even think of it that way, though. I mean, you think about how important it was taking 12 points in four games.
Pull up DC's schedule. Let's see. All right. Let's see how that goes.
Well, DC, I'm looking at it right here. And we have some other topics, too, that we want to cover, obviously. But, I mean, the Revs, you look at the structure of where things are right now. And New England, as Jeff said, positioned themselves where you could start thinking about first place, possibly. All right, so here's the schedule for DC, okay? They got to play Waterhouse FC today, which is the CONCACAF Champions League in Jamaica. So they got a Champions League game today. And then 4 days later, they got to go to Chicago and play Chicago in Chicago. So not an easy turnaround, not necessarily an easy turnaround for DC. And then this is what they got to do. 4 days later, they're back in, well, they're home at least, but they're playing a CONCACAF Champions League game against Toro FC. But that's home, and that's another midweek game.
So now you're looking at three games in the next eight?
Yeah, because they start tonight. And then 3 days later, so it's like four games in 11 days here, if you will, DC plays Philadelphia to close out the month of September.
Yeah, they have a pretty interesting run there. I mean, Waterhouse FC, from what I've seen, is not a very, very intimidating team. But traveling to Jamaica, not necessarily the easiest thing to do. And to play four games in less than 2 weeks is definitely going to be tiring.
Yeah.
They don't have the depth for that.
And it doesn't seem like they have any daunting. The toughest away games I see for remaining for DC here is only Houston, and that's in October. That's October 12th
in Houston. That's a tough place to play.
That's the only game I see being tough. They got Kansas City at home. They got Philadelphia at home. DC has Chicago at home. And then they finish the season in Montreal.
I don't see the Revs taking over, but hey.
I don't see it taking over either. But hey, Jay, like you said, it's a nice, lofty ambition to think about.
And stranger things have happened.
Yeah, the Revs finished in third last year after being under the red line on the last day. All they needed was a 1-0 win. Thank you, Juan Agudelo.
I miss Juan Agudelo.
I know you do. A lot of people miss Juan Agudelo.
Roster deadline today. We can still get him. We have until 5 p.m., everyone.
Oh, how about that?
How great will that be if they do sign him and then I call it? I said it here first.
I would call you a magician now on.
And just for prostate, it's only 9:49 a.m.
It is 9:49 a.m.
It's just the start of the business day, I guess.
Okay. Sap, what do you think business is usually to take over? Deals, what, around 12? I know he's got a microphone. I know he's got no microphone right now. Fine, come over here for a second. Business deals, you know, if you want to sign up.
I'm not as loud as you. I need a microphone in front of my face. I can't just yell.
You can't sit 20 feet away from a microphone and yell.
Yeah, we hear you coming in here from like 150 yards away. When you pull into the parking lot, we know you're coming.
So if you
from Staten Island.
So if you, that's a shot at New York. So if you.
Is Staten Island part of New York?
Yeah, of course it's a part of New York. What type of question is that?
I know, that's the fifth borough.
yeah, it is. It's the forgotten borough, clearly. Anyways.
It's not part of New Jersey.
If you were to sign a player on a deadline day and the deadline was 5 o'clock, when do you think would be the most opportunistic window to make something happen?
4:59.
Get the hell out of here.
No, that's what everyone does. You want to make sure because you may want to get your best deal done. And then you release it. That's why all the trade deadlines you see in the NHL, Major League Baseball, everything's announced like at the last possible minute.
Or in the EPL, it's extended for a friggin' day and a half because people aren't done making deals yet. They only have 3 months. Can't figure something out the last minute. Come on.
Get out of here. No, he's saying. All right. So transitioning away from player movements, at least one thing I do want to get to, because we're talking about standings, we talked about before how important that second home game is. You know, while we were talking with Jeff there, you were looking up some numbers. What is the contrast and difference between where this team is at home and where they're on the road?
It was a pretty daunting task. That's why I did not say anything to Jeff. I'm very bad with numbers. I'm the worst person to give this job to. But
you did it.
I think I did it. So if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. But from what I have, they are 9 home wins.
Okay.
4 home losses.
The only 4 home losses were Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and Columbus.
Yeah,
there you go.
I closed the paper, so don't.
No, no, I know. I just
don't quiz me like that.
Hey,
again.
No, I'm quizzing myself in a way.
But on the road, they have 4 home wins and 8 home losses.
On the road, they have 4 wins and 8 losses.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
there you go.
Having that home field apparently does matter. Apparently, Fortress Foxborough still exists.
Plus, you have 2 ties at home and 1 tie on the road.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't really, you know, those aren't really important.
No, they're not important because Jay only has 3 of them this year.
Yeah. He doesn't believe in ties this year.
No, he does not. Last year is a different story.
Yes.
It's amazing.
They're useful. Jeez. They're useful. I mean, ties are definitely good. I mean, you look at a lot of the other teams, like Chicago's only around because of ties. They have like 3 wins on the season, like 5. I think it's 5.
5. You got it.
So 5 wins on the season, but they have like 4,000 ties, so they're there.
Or like 7.
Yeah.
4,000.
Tomato, tomato.
Excuse me. They have 15 ties.
Yeah, that's a lot.
15 ties. That's a lot of ties.
That's a lot of ties.
A little bit different. Yeah, that's a little bit different.
Like I said, that's a lot of ties. I mean, that's literally, you know, 4 wins worth of ties.
But going back to it, that second home game then is crucial against Sporting Kansas City.
More crucial than I had realized before looking at the numbers. So I will give you credit on that one, Thomas.
Push for second, New England. Do it.
Oh, push for first.
Yeah, push for first. Sure. And that, but
you know what? I'm going for Supporter Shield. It's not out of the question yet.
9 points away. Excuse me. No, you're more than 9 points away now. You're 12 points behind.
We got this.
Seattle. And Seattle's already clinched a playoff spot. How do you like that?
Seattle is a pretty important game tonight.
Yes, they do. All right. That's a great transition right there. Look at you. You are a radio professional.
Yep.
Philadelphia, Seattle, Open Cup Championship tonight down in Dupland.
And for everyone in the world who doesn't have Goal TV, and by everyone in the world, I literally mean everyone in the world, follow Kevin Kincaid on Twitter. He'll be live tweeting.
That's a great shout out for Kevin Kincaid.
I would give you his Twitter handle right off the top of my bat, but I tweeted it out yesterday. Follow my Twitter and then follow Kevin from my Twitter.
I'll give you Kevin Kincaid's. It's Kevin K CBS3 at Kevin K CBS3.
He's the go-to guy.
He is. He's phenomenal.
At this time yesterday, I was going to this game. I was legit getting ready to go to Philadelphia.
And you weren't even going to tell me. So you were to have me do a podcast here, show up.
No, I was going to do
early in the morning.
I was going to do the podcast and then leave directly from the podcast.
Oh, okay. Why didn't you?
I have like a life, I guess, outside of, you know, podcasting
commitment.
And twitting and soccering.
Twitting?
It's called Twitter. It's not called Tweeter.
Fair point.
You know? The twitting.
That's a fair point. Yeah. Okay.
I have obligations.
I got it. But okay. The thoughts on the game tonight between Philadelphia and Seattle. You know, we said Zach McMath, if he doesn't start, we said last week this was, if Zach McMath does not start in goal for Seattle, it's an absolute travesty. But McMath looked like crap the other day versus New York. So, who do you start tonight?
I still go with McMath. It's just like one of those situations where I feel like he deserves it. He got that team to where they are. Like, he played probably 80% of, I mean, all the ones that mattered. Zach McMath played goal for those games. I mean, he was there when they beat the Cosmos. He was there when they beat the Red Bull, the Revs. You got to give it to him. I mean, it would be a disservice to him.
Hey, man, but do you want to win the Open Cup, or do you want to just worry about being respected?
I think regardless of McMath or M.
Because if you win, it doesn't matter. What the hell does it matter who's starting if you win a title? This is the title game we're talking about here.
I honestly don't think Philly has a chance either way.
I wouldn't say that.
I don't think that. Well, I mean, they have a
chance.
This
is a Philadelphia team that beat up on New England twice, and New England took that Seattle team and beat them 5-0 before the World Cup.
And it doesn't matter.
It does.
It does not matter.
It doesn't. It makes. It, my point is that Seattle's not untouchable. These West Coast teams, if you've watched these games this year, have not necessarily done well coming out here.
I don't factor that. I don't.
Think, I do.
I think Seattle's going to win regardless. I don't care who you put in keeper. You could start Andre Blake and Zach McMath, and at the same time, and I still think Seattle wins that game.
Andre Blake will be one of the best keepers in the league one day, but that's a different note.
Maybe.
That's a different note.
Yeah. But I think Seattle wins that game.
All right. I think you're wrong.
Okay.
Do you want to put another iced coffee on this one?
The iced coffee I never got. And it wasn't even iced coffee. It was an Oreo Culotta.
Okay, well, you'll get your Oreo Culotta on Thursday. And then if you win, then you either get another iced coffee or you get to pick between hash browns and a bagel.
Okay. All right. Bet.
Deal. But if I win, I just want an iced coffee.
Okay. All right, that's fine.
Because now, cause now you'd be two up on me.
Yeah.
And then I'd be a real D-bag for not paying up.
So wouldn't it just be if you were to win, we just even out?
We would even out, but like it's just like an exchange of coffees at that point.
Okay.
You know?
All right. Let's do it.
We'll do it. Come on, Jim Curtin. They're going to make the playoffs, man. Regardless of the fact that I know when we talked to Kevin, I know the goal right now is to focus on just putting at least one title into your trophy cabinet 5 years into your franchise's opening. But this team can make the playoffs.
No, I mean, if Philly wins, it's a great story. I don't see it happening. That's just the ultimate part, like the end of the story.
Sebastian Letou. Yeah.
I mean, Sebastian.
One of the best players in the league. Post World Cup,
and he's one of the best players ever in the Open Cup. But so is Kenny Cooper, who's on Seattle. I just Seattle's got depth. I mean, they don't even need to start Dempsey or Obafemi Martins. They like if you start Cooper and Chad Barrett, I still think that they win. They're a good team.
We got a couple more minutes here on the pod, and one topic we wanted to touch on before we go, because let's be honest here. We're guys, and we're men, and we need three things in life. Food, television, and video games. Okay, there is a fourth in there, but I'm not going to say it.
All right.
The three things that are necessities to guys when we're in guy time is food, television, and Xbox, or PlayStation, depending on your preference. And being guys that love this sport and play Xbox or PlayStation, we have FIFA. And we have problems with FIFA. Not the organization, but the video game.
Well.
And the organization.
Yes.
But we'll save the organization for another day. We have our own problems with the video
game. I'm not here to change the world. I'm just here to change a video game.
FIFA 15, here's our problems with it. Actually, we can't even really dissect FIFA 15 problems yet, really. Huh.
The ratings are still out there.
The ratings are still out there.
The ratings are still out there. I saw LA Galaxy tweeted out the ratings for all their players.
I didn't see the Revs do that. They haven't done that yet?
So bad. It's so bad, dude.
But it's like, not fair. Why are American players getting killed so much on soccer games?
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, if you look at it, so I don't have the numbers in front of me.
Let me pull them up. I'll get them to you. Hold on.
Tom does though.
I'll get them to you.
Okay. So for me, I'm a huge MLS guy. Like it's my league. Like Barclays, yeah, okay, whatever, I'll watch it. You know, Bundesliga, yeah, I'll watch it. But MLS, like it's my thing. So I have a beef with FIFA, the video game, because I can't play MLS teams on FIFA because the quality of play is so low because you have players ranked. I mean, so the top-ranked American player, Clint Dempsey, 81. Not an issue with that.
Not an issue with that.
You know, fine. It's a little bit of a drop-off. You got Landon Donovan's at a 77. Jermaine Jones is actually at a 77. Way to go, New England.
There we go. We're ranking.
You know, but then you start getting like a huge drop-off. Like Graham Zuzi, 73.
Yeah.
Right? Giassi Zardes, 70.
Bull!
Yeah.
BS! What 70. Is Bradley Red Phillips? Yeah. Oh, no, he's not American. There you go.
He's still probably... Because this is less of an American bias, I guess, and it's more of an MLS bias. But predominantly the league is American. But, like, so last night, total MLS tweeted out, and there's probably a top, let's say 25. Carlos Bocanegra, 69.
Really?
It's ridiculous. Like, so you're, like, basically, other than Lee Wynn, who's a 71, who I heard, like, was supposed to be updated to a 75.
There you go. Lee, which, jumping up 4 points.
Solid. You're going to tell me that Carlos Bocanegra is better than everyone else on the Revolution other than Lee Wynn and Jermaine Jones?
It's ball. It's ball crap.
That's not realistic anymore. I'm sorry. Like, did he used to be? Absolutely. Is he now? Not even close.
Kellen Rowe, Scott Caldwell should be in the 70s. Those are two guys that should be in the 70s.
Yep. But you're never going to see that because you have people like Jeff Cameron, 72. Timothy Chandler, 72. Alejandro Bedoya, 72.
What?
Chris Wondolowski, 72. Mix Discarude, 72. So it's clear, it's both. It isn't
FIFA 15 hates American soccer players.
Like, Sasha Kljestan is rated higher than Lee Wynn.
That doesn't make sense.
Like, I get...
How many players that are nearing the twilight of their career are better than Lee Wynn?
According to this game, a lot.
Jesus.
Chris Wondolowski's higher than Lee Wynn.
That's pathetic. Like, you kidding me? EA Sports. Like, you go 5 steps forward by putting in all the 20 EPL stadiums, but I'm hearing this, and now you're going like 10 steps backwards. Like, American soccer's not that bad. It's not. Like, give me a break. The fact that I've seen Kellen Rowe, Scott Caldwell, Diego Fagundes, Teal Bunbury, like, those guys are barely pushing 70. It's pathetic.
Yeah, in FIFA 14, basically the highest rev, I think, was Jogo at 69.
Bull.
Like, it's painful because, like I said, I'm an MLS guy. I love MLS. I want to play MLS games, but you can't with this game because they're so pathetically low. And I'm looking for more ratings, but...
You know what another problem with FIFA is, too? There is, and it goes along with FIFA the game, I should say. FIFA the game, all right? We're not coming at you, Sepp Blatter. That's another day we'll come at you. The problem with FIFA 15, or the brand, the series itself, is that there's not enough emphasis on growing MLS. It's all about EPL, La Liga, Bundesliga, and there's like a little corner for MLS. Like, and you would think that with them being North American video game developers, and I get it, the market for soccer is Europe. Don't tell me. All right? I'm not stupid. But,
well,
EA Sports, you know, the social conscience of America is either through sports or video games or TV, media. So change that thinking if you're EA Sports and make MLS just more respectable at least.
Yeah, I also have an issue.
Within a video game. It's not in real life, obviously.
Yeah. I have an issue with the fact that there's no... Like, so I play, like, again, this is like just personal crap at this point.
Yeah, we're just...
No one really cares.
Semantics. But somebody else probably shares these feelings.
I play career mode, and there's no point of starting with MLS, because you can play in MLS, you win a cup, and there's nowhere to go from there. Like, you have to, like, switch teams. And that's, like, a big thing. Like, there's no emphasis on the CONCACAF teams. And, like, in the same thing with the international level, there's no CONCACAF system. And I know several people, because I've had this conversation with several people, and now I'm having it publicly with several more. Why can't there be a CONCACAF expansion where you'd have teams, even like crap holes like Waterhouse FC and, you know, stuff like that, so you could have a CONCACAF Champions League within your league when you're coaching?
You're stuck in the A-League in Australia. They put those stupid leagues in there. Why can't they put it? I completely agree with you, man. You're not getting any complaints from me.
But, or like they just made the FIFA video, the World Cup game. Why can't you throw those teams into FIFA 15, the international games that aren't there?
Because they want to drain your pocket. That's why.
But I've already spent the money on the World Cup game.
And you know what the problem is too? Pro Evolution Soccer has a lot of the rights, I think, to those Spanish leagues. Yeah. Pro Evolution Soccer, stupid.
Who do you think's rated higher in FIFA, Messi or Ronaldo?
Ronaldo.
What?
Messi is a 93. Ronaldo is 92.
Oh, God.
Who do you think,
stupid.
Who do you think third is?
Make them both 93.
Iron Robin.
Yeah, I was going to say him. Damn it.
Just above Ibrahimovic.
Thanks to Jeff Lemieux today. He was cool. Always
sorry
cool.
I didn't talk to you, Jeff. I was trying to crunch numbers. We need an intern.
Did a good job. We do need an intern.
We need an intern. Where's Cam? Can he be our intern?
I thought I had interns.
He probably needs college credit somewhere.
Somebody needs college credits. Who wants to help two guys?
No. Do basic math.
That's all you have to do.
A normal person could do in 2 minutes, and it took me 10.
Speaking of Champions League, UEFA Champions League.
Yes.
Returning.
Tonight, Arsenal, Dortmund.
You want to talk about stupid things that make me pissed off? I got a couple of seconds here, but how the hell is City in a group with three of the same teams from last year? Moscow, Bayern, and City all played in the same group last year. How the hell is that happening again?
Moscow's not that good.
Give me a break.
It's a group.
We have Roma. It's a group of death. Moscow, Roma, Bayern, and City. Give me a break.
If you can't beat Roma or Moscow,
Did you not see where we're... Listen, Roma's not a bad team. They're not terrible.
They're not a great team either.
I think they're going to give teams in that group much more problems than you think. And plus, this is a City team that has to deal with financial fair play. The rules and the relegations at UEFA, the sanctions, there's the word I'm looking for. They got to deal with Champions League sanctions, too. So, I mean, like, this is going to be virtually impossible for City to do anything this year in Champions League. Yeah, but you know what? Like, Manchester United's allowed to spend oodles and oodles of money. Screw you, FIFA! Screw you, Sepp Blatter! Now I'm coming after you.
I have nothing to do with this conversation.
I'm an angry
I'm just attacking video games. I'm not attacking the organization.
No, I'm going to attack the organization.
I'm not trying to change the world, man.
I am going to change thoughts.
I don't want to change the world.
All right.
It's too much effort. It's before noon.
It is before noon, and we are done with this podcast. At @Brian_speaks, follow this man now.
My phone's not blowing up yet.
Because it's recorded. Ah.
It's not live. Okay.
No. I'm Tom Quinlan. This is another edition of the pod. We will see you tomorrow when we talk high school and college sports. We'll talk with Oz Costanza of Everett High School. Got another treat as well.
Big
peace.
Big Ten, where you at? Woof. Been tooken out. I keep MCs looking out. I drop signs, I cross, be dropping, baby. Enough to make the niggas go crazy. In the D-building, taking all types of medicine. Your ass thought you were better than a son. I keep planets in orbit while I'm becoming with